Welcome to the Smarticle Podcast, where we take a good article and make it gooder.
James Swanson is a New York Times bestselling author, presidential historian, legal scholar. His latest book, The Deerfield Massacre, A Surprise Attack, A Forced March, and The Fight for Survival in Early America. James, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you're obviously a historian. I want to know if it's genetics or environment. Your grandma gave you an interesting gift for your birthday when you were a kid. Tell us about the baseball glove that you did not get and if history is actually in your blood.
Yes, it is. My grandmother gave me, when I was 10 years old, a framed engraving of John Wilkes Booth's Derringer pistol that he used to kill Abraham Lincoln. You might think a normal gift for a 10-year-old boy might be a bicycle, a baseball glove, something like that. And that engraving was framed with a clipping from the Chicago Tribune from the morning of April 15th, 1865, the day that Lincoln died. He was shot on the 14th. He died on the 15th. And the clipping said, "John Wilkes Booth, the actor, the assassin, she was the president, leads to the stage." And then at that point, someone had cut the clipping off in mid-sentence. And I hung that frame engraving on my wall for all my boyhood. And I must have read that story hundreds of times. And I thought, what happened next? And later, when I was researching and writing the book, I obtained an entire run of Chicago Tribunes from April 1865. So I found the original newspaper from which that clipping had been done. I grew up in a family of storytellers, though. That same grandmother told me when I was 6 years old and said, "Jamie, did you know, during the World's Fair of 1893 in Chicago, a madman doctor murdered 100 girls and dissolved their bodies in acid?" And my mother said, "Well, he didn't know until you told him. He's 6 years old." And my grandfather was on the Chicago police force from the 1930s, the Al Capone era, to the late 1960s, the civil rights protest and Vietnam War protest era. He came home one night from work and said, "Don't let Jamie look at the newspapers tonight." And I was a newspaper reader even when I was a boy. And I looked, of course. I disobeyed him. And I read about Richard Speck. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah.
Richard Speck was the monster who murdered 8 or 9 student nurses in their apartment. And so I grew up hearing wild stories from my grandparents and my parents. My father went to Lane Tech High School in Chicago, where one of the 8 Nazi saboteurs landed on American shores in 1942 during World War II, Herbert Hans Haupt. And so he told me about that. And so I've grown up hearing these wild historical stories.
I guess you're destined to be a historian, so we'll leave it at that. So I suppose for the uninitiated, we should know what the Deerfield Massacre is, but I'll ask it this way. Why should an American know about the Deerfield Massacre?
Because it's a great unknown story from a lost early America that we remember nothing about. This is not the America of the American Revolution of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams. They hadn't even been born yet. This is a frightening, terrifying early America in 1704 when people believed in witchcraft, suspicion, the paranormal, the supernatural, and the constant threat of Indian attacks on their farms and forests. It was a dangerous, forgotten, terrifying America that we've totally forgotten about today. And the story of Deerfield and Reverend John Williams, who's one of the great heroes of this history, is inspiring to us today. His values of patriotism, faith, family, endurance, survival resonate down to the present day.
Yeah, that leads me to sort of the question. It's funny, when I was reading this, and you reference this a little bit in the book, but I'd love for you to talk about it a little bit more, which is, when the book was first written, when people referred to it, they referred to it as the Deerfield Attack. But later on, it becomes the Deerfield Massacre. And I know you even reference it as like, but why do we choose, how does it become that? How does history change? Why'd you choose that title?
Well, I chose the title because that's what it's become popularly known as. Now, the people who survived it, and remember, the night of the attack, the Indians and French killed 50 people. They took 112 people hostage and forced them on a death march to Canada, where they killed 20 people along the way, pregnant women, babies, infants. It was ruthless. And strangely, the people who lived through it didn't call it a massacre. Violence was ever present in early America, and it was almost routine or expected. It was not till a century later, on the 100th anniversary in 1804, when the town minister referred to it being a massacre several times in his sermon. And no one considered it that. And then, really, in the late 1870s and 1880s, during the period of colonial revival, when people were revering their early settler ancestors, it became properly known as the massacre, mainly because Deerfield's historian at the time, George Sheldon, who wrote a magnificent history book. He collected books, artifacts, documents. Without George Sheldon, a lot of the early history of Deerfield would have been lost. But they were looking back during the period of colonial revival, and they want to honor their ancestors. And so they really popularized the use of the word massacre. So that's how it came into vogue later, many years after it happened.
Yeah, that was interesting. Another interesting thing that I saw in the book, or that struck me, this is just a little editorial. I thought you did a really, really fair job of explaining both sides. I really appreciated that I felt like it wasn't heavy-handed. It was just straightforward. It's like, this is what happened. These are the people involved. And you just said it. Life at that time was brutal and ruthless. So it was an unapologetic explanation of that. But one thing that struck me that I found fascinating was John Williams' daughter, Eunice. She marries a Native Indian, Native Canadian or Huron. I'm not sure which tribe it was.
A Mohawk.
She marries and she's Mohawk. So she stays there. Why did they stay? She wasn't the only one, by the way. Why did they stay?
Well, what happened was this. Eunice was 7 years old during the attack. And during the attack, John Williams' two youngest children were murdered on his doorstep. They just swung them through the air and smashed their skulls open on the stone door. And then Eunice saw this happen. She was seven. She was captured by Mohawk, and they took her, along with a total of five Williams children, captive to Canada. And she was secluded from her family. Her mother had been tomahawked to death the first night of the death march. So she loses two siblings, she loses her mother, and then she's isolated from her father. And the Indians, that tribe believed in mourning wars, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, which means they wanted to replace tribal members with white captives, children, girls and boys. And they made them official members of the tribe. They weren't treated as slaves or mistreated. They were welcomed as members of the tribe. So imagine poor Eunice, 7 years old, two siblings murdered in front of her. Her mother is dead. She's kept separate from her father. And she's raised to speak the Indian language, raised in Indian culture, influenced by the Jesuit priests in Canada who helped perpetrate this raid. They want to convert her to Catholicism. They want her to become a member of the Mohawk tribe. And that's exactly what happened. Over a period of time, the child captives forgot to speak English. They forgot their Puritan faith. They dressed like Indians, not like New England colonists. And so it was a process of acculturating them into the tribes. And one of the great heartbreaking moments in John Williams' life is when she would never come home. His lifelong hope was she would return to Deerfield again, but she remained a Mohawk throughout her life. And also this, she is one of the probably the oldest living survivor of the Deerfield raid. She died in her late 80s, and she's probably the last person who experienced the raid and lived to remember it.
Wow. And she didn't speak English. They lost the language. So it was just that to me was truly fascinating. I really appreciated that part of the book. What's interesting about Deerfield, I've been there. I went to Deerfield Academy for a conference once. It's a pretty little town, but you don't think of it as the frontier. Can you speak a little bit about what life was like for these people on that frontier?
Yes. If you go to Deerfield today, it's a beautiful museum town, the mile-long street with many houses from the Revolutionary War. Historic Deerfield has museums and runs those houses. There's also, to get an earlier taste of Deerfield, there's the Pocumptic Valley Memorial Association Museum, which is in the headquarters of the original Deerfield Academy building, built in 1799. If you go to that museum, which is my favorite standalone museum in America, you'll get a taste of the earlier Deerfield of the late 1600s and earlier 1700s. In fact, it's that museum that possesses the so-called old Indian door with tomahawk strikes and gashes in it that survived the night of the raid. And so the modern day Deerfield doesn't look like it looked like. You can see a replica of the so-called old Indian house that withstood the siege that night that was built a century ago. And that'll give you a sense of what Deerfield must have looked like then. But it's quite different today. It looks peaceful today. It's pretty today. It's not the tough early life for the 300 settlers who lived there in the late 1600s and early 1700s. They weren't rich. They were poor. They didn't have a lot of material wealth. The purpose of the raid was not to rob the town. There was nothing really worth stealing aside from cattle or a few valuables. And so early life in Deerfield was hard. There was no money there. People bartered and traded for things. It was a hard scrabble place. The people there were trying to recreate an English farming village. And they were poor, didn't have a lot of money. faith was very important. So it was a very primitive town compared to what it was 75 years later during the American Revolution. Mm.
As you can hear, the book is fascinating. James, before you go, you have a new show coming out on Apple TV, Manhunt. It's based on your book, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer. I'm wondering if one of your books gets turned into a show on Apple TV, does that afford you a new house on Barbados? Does that mean you get to buy?
I wish it did. I'd be happy if it just lets me afford a house in Deerfield.
No, it's a fascinating book. And just give us a little story on the Apple TV show.
Yes, Apple TV based a show called Manhunt on my book, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killers. And it really is about what happened in the aftermath of the Lincoln assassination. And the main hero of the show, one of the two main heroes, is Tobias Menzies from Outlander and The Crown, who plays Lincoln's forgotten best friend, Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton. Stanton had to pursue the killers. He had to hunt down General Wilkes Booth. He had to win the Civil War. He had to plan the Lincoln funeral train. And so he's one of the great heroes of the book. And our Abraham Lincoln is played by Hamish Linklater, who said, I've known other Abraham Lincolns. I knew Gregory Peck. I know Sam Waterston, who played Lincoln. I've met Hal Holbrook, who's Lincoln. A great surprise in the miniseries to the public, is going to be Hamish Linklater is a fantastic Abraham Lincoln. When we met on the set, he said, I was afraid to meet you. You, the expert, what if I was terrible? I said, you are Abraham Lincoln. He really embodies the spirit and character of Abraham Lincoln. So I think people are going to love Tobias as Stanton, and they're going to love Hamish as Lincoln. And Anthony Boyle, who's on Masters of the Air now, that TV mm-hmm. series, plays our John Wilkes Booth with intensity wow. and fervor. So I think people are really going to enjoy the show. And that premieres March 15th.
Is Hamish American?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. It sounded like, okay. Nevertheless, the show's Manhunt premieres on Apple TV. The book, the new book from James Swanson is The Deerfield Massacre, Surprise Attack, Forced March, and the Fight for Survival in Early America. James, you're a peach. We thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. It's been great. Thanks.